podcasting technology of normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It's Thursday, October 25th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us right now at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. In our audio stash today, we have a great program for you. This is some of the content we gathered at the 2007 Normal Conference just a few weeks ago in Los Angeles, California. The conference was just a wonderful gathering, and all the attendees walked away very empowered and also very informed. One of the highlights of the conference, many people mentioned, is the author we're featuring today. Matthew Robinson's new book is called Lies, Damned Lies, and Drug War Statistics, a critical analysis of claims made by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Matthew has been here on the program before. We spoke with him just after the book's release and a presentation he gave at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C. back in May. And his complete presentation is available on the Normal Events podcast and on the Normal Conference 2007 webpage. We have links to them right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. You'll also find a link there to Matthew's book. Following that portion of Matthew's presentation today, we'll play the interview we conducted right at the conference on Saturday, October 13th. Here's Matthew Robinson at the 2007 Normal Conference. Again, you can download this complete presentation on Normal's 2007 conference page and the Normal Events podcast.
First of all, I want to say thank you to Normal and particularly to Alan for the invitation. This is a wonderful opportunity to be here and to address you. I've had a great time. I'm really looking forward to the presentation. Alan mentioned I went to Florida State and that I stayed there for a long time. I stayed there, frankly, because of their football team. They were pretty good. I enjoyed it. When I left, they suck now. And I went to this little university that no one had ever heard of called Appalachian State. And they subsequently won back-to-back football championships. And this is the Appalachian State, if you know, that beat Michigan at Michigan. And Appalachian State's a little... I know. But Michigan's doing fine, right? We woke them up. So anyway, I want to thank you for that. I've had some great experiences. On my name tag, I got an autograph from Tommy Chong. So I'm going to go home and tell my kids. I have a 6-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son. Look, I got Tommy Chong's autograph. And they're going to say, who's Tommy Chong? And I'm going to say, well, he got famous for smoking marijuana. And they're going to say, what's marijuana? And I'm going to say, well, we'll talk about that later. Don't worry about it. I got to hear Judge Gray speak, and he's been a great inspiration to me. I use his book in my class, The Drug War, that I teach at ASU, his book about why our drug laws have failed and what we can do about it. So that was a great experience. The title of our book is Lies, Damn Lies, and Drug War Statistics. And this is from a quote that Mark Twain popularized, where he said there are three types of lies, damn lies, and statistics. So we don't think it's fair to say that statistics lie, but clearly statistics can be used to lie. I attended a panel yesterday where Marsha Rosenbaum talked about this kind of ideology of ONDCP, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, that that THC content in marijuana has increased, and she looked at that critically and showed that that's frankly not true. I saw Mitch Earlywine speak about the ONDCP claim that marijuana causes psychosis and schizophrenia, and he showed that that's simply not true. And I attended the presentation by Harry Levine where he really took on the famous quote from the drug czar. Well, the drug czar had said one of the greatest urban myths or urban legends of our time is that the drug war creates racial disparities. I don't know if you remember he said that way back when. And Professor Levine showed that that's obviously, there are major racial disparities in terms of the drug war, particularly with arrests and that sort of thing. So you guys kind of know what I'm going to do here. What our research did was provide an overall context for these individual lies, if you will, to show that actually the strategy of the Office of the National Drug Control Policy is essentially to manipulate statistics in order to continue to sell the drug war, to justify the dominant ideology that drugs are bad all the time, that people who use drugs are bad all the time, that there's no such thing as safe drug use, on and on and on. And so they utilize statistics not to carefully and honestly evaluate the drug war, but instead to sell this ideology about the harmful nature of drugs. Well, as you know, the Office of National Drug Control Policy was founded in November of 1988. It is the official federal agency of accountability, according to the drug czar. It's the agency of accountability in the drug war. It is, according to him, the agency that can be held accountable for success or failures in the drug war. So keep that in mind as I present today. The book grew out of our class that we teach at Appalachian State called The Drug War, as I mentioned. And, you know, anytime you teach a course for the first time in particular, we use a lot of government data just to show students kind of realities of drugs and the drug war. So I want to show you some slides from a slideshow that we found from 2000. These are slides created by the Office of National Drug Control Policy in 2000 called The Drug War Today. And we were only using these for one simple purpose, to show our students the realities of drugs and the drug war. And we noticed these kind of slides. So this says, since 1985, all major drugs show a substantial decline in the level of current use. Notice they start in 1985. And ONDCP was created in 1988. They characterize this as a substantial decline. Our students said, well, okay, why would they start in 85? I think the answer is obvious. If you start in 1988, that's clearly not a substantial decline. So it's sort of just a clever way to make something go down when it's really not going down. Here's another slide. Since 1979, current drug use is down substantially. Of course, 1979 was the peak in illicit drug use in the United States, so everything's going to go down from the peak. So they start in 1979. If you start in 1988, again, when ONDCP was created, it's very hard to justify this claim that drug use is down substantially, although it's down somewhat. Here's one more example from the 2000 PowerPoint slideshow that they created. While drug use is still unacceptably high, 2000 is the fourth year without significant changes in the current use of any illicit drug. So what they're asking you to do, in essence, is to focus on the last 4 years. See? It's still unacceptably high, but it's not going up anymore. This kind of short-term focus, as it turns out, is very typical of ONDCP, as is the fact that they ignore the overall long-term trend. So imagine this. ONDCP was created in 1988. They get up and running in 1989. We start collecting systematic data on 8th, 10th, and 12th graders in 1991. You notice they're reporting data from 1991 to 2000. You notice they're breaking it down by grade, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. I ask you to remember that later because they stopped doing that eventually under the Bush administration. But what they're saying is basically, hey, we've been in existence for 15 years. Drug use is going up. Give us more money. And actually, that is what they say. When drug use goes up, they say we have a major problem, so we need more money. We have to fight harder. And when it works, when drug use goes down, they say the same thing. Hey, it works, so we need more money because we're going to win. So either way, we have the same policy conclusion of give us more money and continue the drug war. So we wondered, and really I give credit to my students for pointing out that this kind of things to us when they saw the slideshow that we were using. Very good critical thinking. We wondered if this was typical of ONDCP, so we engaged in a systematic study of their claims. We looked at the National Drug Control Strategy, which comes out every year in February of each year. And basically, in that strategy report, ONDCP states its goals, its objectives, how it's going to measure them, It talks about the budget, what we're spending the money on, what they expect, and they assess to some degree how the drug war is going. So the National Drug Control Strategy is the key document because it tells us, American citizens and policymakers, lawmakers, how goes the drug war. So the goals of our book, we wanted to, one, determine if, and this is really the most important part of our book, does ONDCP use and present statistics appropriately? And you probably know the answer. And secondly, we tried to assess the drug war under ONDCP, and we did this in two primary ways. One, does the drug war achieve its goals? A policy that achieves its goals can be considered successful, whereas one that does not can be considered a failure. And two, do the benefits outweigh the cost? A policy whose benefits outweigh the cost can be considered successful. A policy whose costs outweigh the benefits can be considered not successful. We actually did a 10-year analysis of ONDCP, the first 10 years from 1989 to 1998. The reason we did that was because one of the major sources of information on drugs was changed, the National Household Survey. The methodology was changed in 98, so it really wasn't appropriate to go beyond that. But the first 10 years of ONDCP, how did we do? Now, let me just say one thing about taking on the White House. I've always been an advocate for truth. I've always been an advocate for justice. My mother raised me to be that way. She told me to fight and fight and fight no matter what it costs you. Always tell the truth. Always do the right thing. She, you know, I'm proud that she raised me that way, and it's gotten me into some trouble. I want to say, however, that I am very fearful of taking on this particular White House. We saw what they did with Ambassador Joe Wilson when he questioned their intelligence use to justify the Iraq war in terms of the uranium from Niger. We saw what happened to Richard Clark, who is the top counterterrorism official in the Clinton administration, who successfully prevented major terrorist attacks on President Clinton and was just literally ignored by President Bush. We saw what they did to him. We saw what they did to O'Neill, who was the Secretary of the Treasury, Treasury. And he basically has 19,000 documents on which he bases his book, showing that they were talking about Iraq from day one. And all these people have had their characters assassinated. So look, I have a great life. I have a wonderful family. I have a good job. I'm in a great place to live. I have a lot of motivation to just have a good life. But my motivation is for my children. I want them to live in a world where their country's government tells the truth. And so that's why I'm taking on this particular White House. Just wanted to lay out. Thank you. Well, that's very kind. I'll take that from my mom. It's all her. She takes credit for that. Now, based on the book, I can answer at least 8 major questions about the drug war and what ONDCP says about it. The first question is a drug war a well-planned policy? A well-planned policy means it's well thought out. It has carefully listed and defined goals. It has measurable objectives that you can test with data. It lays out a careful evaluation plan. It's rooted in empirical evidence rather than someone's philosophy or ideology or personal beliefs. We know from research that planned policies are much more likely to be effective than unplanned policies, which are the opposite of planned policies. They're sort of shooting from the hip, not based on data, based on someone's personal opinion and that sort of thing. Well, there's one way to answer this is to look at the goals of the drug war. In 1998, and by the way, before this, there were 14 or 15 drug war goals, and then there was 5, and now there's 3. But in 1998, you see, the one in blue deals with reducing drug use. The ones in black deal with reducing the costs and the harms of drugs. And the ones in green deal with disrupting the market. So I've color-coded them to show you the most recent drug war goals. There's only 3. So these were removed and these were added. Why? Why did they stop talking about reducing crime and violence and reducing health costs? And why did they start talking about treatment? And I think we can answer that with the presentation today. But the bottom line is the shifting goals are suggestive of a policy that's not well planned. In terms of the objectives of the drug war, this is the objectives of the drug war under President Clinton. Notice the wide breadth of objectives here that are measurable. Things like reducing availability of drugs by 50%. How are we doing? In 2007. It's 2007. Reducing the demand for illicit drugs. How are we doing? 50% by 2007, reducing the health and social costs. How are we doing? 25%. Have we achieved these? Is a question we can answer because these are objectives that are measurable. Under President Bush, you notice there's only 4 objectives. All of them deal with use. They only pertain to use. And this kind of shifting of objectives is also suggestive of a policy that's not well planned out. I want to point out, however, that President Bush's, the ONDCP under President Bush has objectives pertaining to youth and adults. And I ask you to remember that, because later on you'll see that ONDCP only reports data with regard to youth. Like, they just forgot about adults. But these are their objectives, okay? These are not my objectives. These are their objectives. They're supposed to assess the effectiveness of the drug war using their objectives. And finally, I want to point out in terms of the whether it's a well-planned policy, not only have the goals and objectives shifted, but so too have the evaluation periods and the sources of data they use. I'll try to explain this chart to you as well as I can. ONDCP created these performance measures of effectiveness to measure how well they're doing in the drug war. And for that, they got a lot of credit. They have not received a lot of criticism for the fact that they're not actually using these. They only used them for 1 year in 1998, and they created three reports about how we were doing in terms of the goals of the 1998 strategy. Notice that they set target goals in black. Again, the white's a little bit hard to see. There's a white chart there. But basically, their goals were to reduce youth drug use or illicit drug use among 12 and older. And remember, to have it consistently go down. That's what the chart shows you. Well, originally in the 1998 strategy, they wanted to evaluate the drug war from 1996 to 2007. That's what they stated they were going to do. In the 2002 strategy, they changed the beginning date to 2000. Then in the 2003 strategy, they changed the beginning again to 2002. And eventually, they just dropped the National Household Survey and went to monitor in the future. Now, you read our book, we said that how they explained this, they said, well, the changing of the methodology of the National Survey on Drug Use and Health mandated that we, you know, become innovative and creative, and we met the challenge by using the monitoring the future as a data source. But again, all of this is evidence that this is not a well-planned policy. So the first conclusion I have is that the drug war is not a well-planned policy. We have the shifting goals. We have the varied objectives over time. We have the changing evaluation periods and data sources. And this, simply stated, is not consistent with something that's well thought out and well planned. The second question is the drug war balanced? And that's a term that's used by the Office of National Drug Control Policy in its strategy reports. They call it balanced and effective. Well, the first thing I did was look at the 2007 strategy. This is the fiscal year 2008 budget, and you notice that what we call the demand side aspects of the drug war make up only about 36% of the budget. So 64% of the budget is for the war-like part of the war, you know, military, policing, you know, seizures and all that kind of stuff. The stuff that works, treatment and prevention, is actually a very small minority of the budget. To ONDCP, this is balanced. I want to point out that the numbers also include research costs, not actual delivery costs, whereas domestic law enforcement has no research costs in the drug war. They're just applying what we've already done in the war on crime and now in the war on terror. They're just applying that to the war on drugs. So this is just logic and common sense. So spending on the drug war is clearly not balanced. What I found really interesting was I created this chart from the White House documents, the National Drug Control Strategy. This is one of their tables. And the top line shows you supply-side spending, and the bottom line shows you demand-side spending. So not only is the drug war not balanced, it's becoming increasingly imbalanced every year under the Bush administration. That's key because, look, the Bush administration and ONDCP under this administration says, we're all about treatment, we're all about being compassionate. And yet every year, treatment gets less and less of a portion of the drug control budget. Well, which is more effective, supply side or demand side measures? The research shows very clearly that treatment and prevention, when done correctly, are much more effective than law enforcement, are much more effective than interdiction or seizures or that sort of thing. It's much more effective than going to other countries and eradicating crops. And yet we're spending less and less money on it every year. And one more thing about this, ONDCP took at least one measure here to create the appearance of a more balanced drug war, and it happened between 2002 and 2003. Keep in mind this figure showing the increasing divergence in terms of supply side and demand side spending. Something happened between 2002 and 2003 in terms of how the budget was reported. What happened? Spending on law enforcement and interdiction plummeted, and spending on treatment increased. What happened? Nothing. They changed their budget format. They removed spending on law enforcement and corrections costs, which is the reactive supply-side measures, and they just stopped reporting it. Now, we're still spending the money. It's still being spent by taxpayers. This is not in the budget. So by changing the budget, it had two net effects. One, it reduced the amount that was in the budget, so it shrunk the drug control budget from like $20 billion to $12 billion. That's conservative, you know, responsible government, small government. Although we're still spending it. and the second thing it did was that it created the appearance that the drug budget was more balanced, when in fact it's simply not. Well, here's ONDCP's explanation. I'll let them speak for themselves. This brings about greater accountability. Yep. This makes the drug budget more accountable to the taxpayer by not reporting the spending. On the bottom there, they say agencies that provide a minimal contribution to the National Drug Control Program will be excluded. So prisons, that's a small part of the drug war. It's irrelevant. We don't need to talk about those data. The conclusion there is the drug war is not well balanced. It's obviously imbalanced in favor of supply side measures. It's increasingly warlike in nature. And that change in budget actually masks some of the imbalance. That's the first evidence that I've shown you of the dishonesty in terms of our analysis by ONDCP. Let me say one thing about the increasing warlike nature. In the 2007 strategy, which is the most recent one, obviously, the smallest part of the strategy in terms of pages is treatment. It's like five pages. And one of them is filler. Talks about some treatment facility. The largest one is market disruption. That section, section three, about disrupting markets, has its own preface. It's the only section that has its own preface. And the preface is about, not drugs, terrorism. The war on drugs is now officially linked by ONDCP to be part of the war on terror. The biggest figure, the biggest map in the 2007 strategy is a picture of Afghanistan. So it is increasingly warlike. The third question, and this is the biggest one, this is where I'll spend most of my time. Is the drug war effective? Part one. And, of course, the most important goal of the drug war, according to ONDCP, is to reduce drug use. So does it reduce drug use? Is it effective as claimed by ONDCP? To answer these questions, we'll look at some of the figures from the strategy reports from 2000 on to 2007. I tried to focus on the most recent ones for you. Here's one from 2003. And the claim says, we have achieved an important goal of getting drug use by our young people moving downward. We must now secure that. This is somewhat misleading because ONDCP has never stated a goal to begin drug use getting downward. But they've achieved that goal. In these slides, I want you to focus on three major points. Okay, one is the short-term focus. There you go. That's the first point. We've begun to get it going down. Okay. Second point, ignoring the long-term trend. Drug use is going up. And third, this kind of manipulation and selective presentation of statistics. Notice, it's hard to see, I think, for you guys because of the color scheme of their slides, but you see they're reporting 8th, 10th, and 12th graders separately, just like they did in the 2000 slideshow. Okay, keep that in mind as we move on. Here's one from the 2004 National Drug Control Strategy. In his 2002 State of the Union Address, the president set a national goal of reducing drug use. It's an ambitious goal. To many, it seemed improbable, yet that goal has been met. Point one, short-term focus. Point two, ignoring the long-term trend. And point three, selective use of statistics. This says 8th, 10th, and 12th graders combined. Now, why would they combine the data when historically they've always reported separately? All I did was go to the Monitoring the Future website and calculate the declines, and every one of them went down 10% except 12th graders. And you know what? It went down like 8%. Instead of just saying that, you know, well, look, everything's going down, and it's even going down among 12th graders, but only 8%. Instead of just saying that, they combine the data to create the appearance that all drugs are going down 10% when they're not. It's very misleading. The other thing I want to say about this is this claim was actually not in the 2002 State of the Union Address. I went and I just looked, you know, it's on the White House website. I went to, it's whitehouse.gov, by the way. Does anybody know that joke? Don't go to whitehouse.com by accident. That's a porn site. Whitehouse.gov, you know, you can read his speeches online, and the only mention, the word drug was only mentioned one time, and it was about prescription drugs, you know, making them affordable for the elderly. So I don't even know where this goal came from, to be honest. It was not in the 2002 strategy. Here's another example from the 2006 strategy. Again, you notice the claim that use of the rave drug ecstasy has been cut in half. Notice point one. First of all, let me point out that now they're, this is the same year, I said 2006, 2004, this is the same year that I just showed you where overall they're reporting the combined statistics with regard to ecstasy. They're doing it separately. So why would they do that? But point one, you notice the short-term focus, we've cut it in half. Point two, ignoring the long-term trend, basically nothing happened with ecstasy. It went up and went down, as all things do. Here's another slide from 2005. Says the president's goal, a 10% reduction in youth drug use, has been met and exceeded, with some details. Point one, notice the short-term focus. This is what they're talking about. Drug use has gone down. Point two, ignoring the long-term trend of an increase. And point three, we're back to the combined data again. Like, they can't even make up their mind how they're going to present the data. One of the cool things about the National Drug Control Strategy in the 1990s and in the early 21st century was it was always the same. You know, everything was the same format. So you know where to find things. It changes every year now. It's like they can't decide what they want to put in it. It's very strange. In the 2006 strategy, again, they're focusing on the short-term part, what's going on now, and they actually make it very clear with that little box they put there, 19% decline from 2001 in terms of any illicit drug use. Again, point two, they're ignoring the long-term trend of an increase. And now they're again combining the data instead of reporting them separately. That's the third point. What's really interesting to me and what I discovered, which kind of shocked me in the 2006 strategy, was there was only four figures that pertained to drug use. Every one of those four figures showed a decline. So with regard to every figure in the 2006 strategy, if you just read it casually, it looks like everything's going down. That's kind of the point, I guess. Here's one of those figures. Notice the short-term focus. Notice that drugs are going down among young people, according to them. Although we have the special tabulations. These are not data that are available to anyone. These are data that they requested to be calculated. Here's another slide with regard to methamphetamine. Notice how it's going down. Notice the combined data, the special tabulations. Steroid use going down in the short term. The combined special tabulations again. So this is not something that you can verify without calling, I don't know, Monitoring the Future or whoever. In terms of 2007, something interesting happened. For the first time in recent memory, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy showed a long-term trend the way I would show it if I made a slide. And I thought, well, you know what? They might have heard about the book before, because the book was out, and I had been in touch with a lot of people about it. Many of you heard from me about the book. And maybe, just maybe, we made them do something right, you know? So here it is. Notice the long-term focus, the data on 12th graders for Monitoring the Future going back to the first year, the data on 8th, 10th, and 12th graders starting in 1991. Notice that they're breaking the grades out by grade instead of combining them. This is all great news, okay? Now, we teach our students critically. I love that you talk about undergraduate, using your undergraduate knowledge to evaluate this, because that's what my students have, right? So they take statistics and they take research methods, and they're supposed to be able to tell whether a trend's going up or down, at the very least. How would you characterize that trend from 1991, the first year from which we had data on all three grades? That's a slight increase in drug use, right? Here's, however, what they end up focusing on, the end part of this trend line, as I'll show you. So in 2007, they have this great figure from 2001 to 2006. Everything's going down. Everything in the figure is going down. Every form of drug use is going down. By the way, including alcohol and tobacco, which we're not having a drug war on. But ONDCP doesn't talk about that. What are the implications for the drug war that alcohol and tobacco are also going down and we're not fighting a drug war on that? We know that youth are being targeted by tobacco and alcohol companies even today, and yet the use is going down. So what's up with that? There's no explanation.
That was author Matthew Robinson speaking about his book, Lies, Damn Lies, and Drug War Statistics, a critical analysis of claims made by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. We have links to the book on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. You can also find links there to download Matthew's complete presentation in audio at the 2007 conference. We get a chance to sit down with Matthew Robinson right after his presentation. Here's that interview now.
Also, too, the book has gotten a fair amount of recognition from the Drug Policy Alliance and Normal and other groups out here. It's really the first time that these statistics have been laid out next to the press releases from the ONDCP and next to their own rhetoric.
Right.
When you looked into this, were you surprised? I mean, we expect a bit of propaganda from the drug war and the office that runs it, but were you surprised at the level of it?
Absolutely, and that's probably a little bit of my idealism and maybe being a bit naive. The first time we taught a class on the drug war, we were presenting statistics from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, and there was this assumption that the statistics and the slideshows and the data were accurate, and that they were presenting it, and so that we could utilize it for evaluating the drug war in our class. And when we discovered this level of dishonesty in some of the information, we were just curious to see if it was more systematic. And so we took a more systematic approach to evaluate their claims over a 7-year period. And then it was some of it was very subtle, and you really had to look. And some of it was just so blatant that I was literally shocked that that they would stoop to that level to deposit claims, like about the Just Say No program that's been consistently proven over and over again that it's a failure. To go to that level of hiring someone by their own admission to hire this agency to create this slide, which is an inaccurate depiction of the realities of drug use trends, that's way over the top and totally unacceptable.
You know, also, too, the ONDCP lately has come under some flack for government contracting and the like. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to follow their statistics? I mean, do they keep good records?
I don't know if they keep good records or not. The good news about ONDCP is their website, and so they reference all of these available data. Now, some of them you really have to look for. They're not readily available. It's not necessarily well organized all the time. But if you look and you look carefully, you can find all the relevant data that you need. And so it's relatively easy to check their claims, but using their own data and the data that they reference. What's really somewhat surprising is oftentimes they'll make a claim about something, for example, that student drug testing works. And what we found was when they were selling this at its height of their claims that they were selling the effectiveness of drug testing in high schools and middle schools, they would use one school as an example or one interaction of one person who was bagging someone's groceries and how that proves that drug testing worked. And at that very time, on the front page of Monitoring the Future website, was a big study that said, national study finds student drug testing ineffective. So here's the data on which they can base a lot of their claims on these data for Monitoring the Future. And they're making these claims about student drug testing, and at the very time they're making these claims, on the front page of that website is a study disproving the effectiveness of student drug testing. So that kind of thing is really shocking to find.
Also, too, I mean, we know 44% of all drug arrests are marijuana violations. This is more than for heroin or cocaine combined.
Right.
So it's no misnomer that the ONDCP kind of treats marijuana differently, that the ONDCP actively treats marijuana differently than other drugs and really focuses on it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's several reasons for that. Okay, number one, obviously it's the most widely used illegal drug, and so in that sense it makes sense to focus on. Also, because of their perspective that it's a gateway substance, they believe that users of marijuana are more likely to go on and use other substances. For those reasons, it makes sense to focus on marijuana. However, you know, if there's any drug that people are going to use, it should be marijuana. It's the least harmful. It's relatively harmless, especially compared to alcohol and tobacco, which are legal. There's no debate about that. And so that focus is really not justified. The other thing about the gateway hypothesis has been disproven again and again and again. We just completed a study, for example, where we found that users of marijuana were more likely slightly to use other substances, but once you control for personality variables and environmental variables, in other words, there's things unique to individuals in their environments that make them more likely to take another step to other drugs, then the gateway hypothesis would not support it. And beyond that, virtually everyone who started with marijuana really didn't start with marijuana, they started with alcohol and tobacco. And since they were under the age of 18 for tobacco and under the age of 21 for alcohol, that's the first step in illegal drug use. Those are two crimes, if you will. And they and so there's no support for the gateway hypothesis when you look at all the available data. So yeah, I'm not surprised by the fact that they focus on marijuana, but it's really not justified based on the realities of the drug.
Righto. And how do we hold the AONDCP accountable? You talked about that in your presentation, but because this is a presidential office, you know, what's the most effective way that we can try and hold the AONDCP accountable?
Well, I think obviously contacting our representatives, reaching out to the media to get the truth out there. And look, AONDCP can be removed from the White House. It can be removed from an executive agency. It can become part of, let's say, the Government Accountability Office, or if we want to have a drug war, there can be a drug czar's office that's separate and distinct from the executive office, make it part of the legislative branch or something, so that the legislature has oversight, the Congress has oversight on it. So really, the key point in terms of accountability is getting the pressure on members of Congress to do something about it. Because they know, I mean, I've made them available, so they know if they're reading the emails and letters and that sort of thing that are sent, they know that what's going on with AONDCP. And some of them have tried to hold it accountable, but so far there's not been enough pressure.
You know, do you think that that's going to be a new focus of activism is on the AONDCP specifically, that would be a good place to focus a lot of these efforts?
Well, I sure hope so, because we provided a lot of ammunition for activists to use, and we, you know, we personally have done some of that activism ourselves, trying to get contacting media and reform organizations and members of Congress to get the word out there. So yes, I would absolutely hope so. I think there's great hope for that.
Righto. I want to ask you one more quick question, because not only are you an author, but you're also a college professor, and you also help facilitate a normal group on your campus. Is that correct?
That's correct. I've been involved with several groups on campus, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. There's a HEMP organization, Normal. There's several groups that I've been involved with over the past 10 years.
Let me ask you about that experience. I mean, a lot of professors, maybe about a third of them, participate in these type of group moderation and things like that. How do you find the experience of doing that?
You know, it's mixed. It's obviously a great time to hang out with students and to hear their perspective and to get a different perspective on things. And then it's somewhat frustrating at times, because just like any kind of group, there's going to be people who don't do their part and people who don't take it quite as seriously, or they think it's just about, hey, let's get together and use drugs or something like that. But it's definitely overall a very positive experience working with students, and I really enjoy it.
How does academia look at this issue? I mean, do they consider the drug war issue? Is it part of academic discussions, or is it a lot like the media treats the drug war, do you think?
It depends. I think there are certainly academic disciplines that are focused historically on the drug war, and there are certainly professors in various disciplines who have done really important research on the drug war. And I think the general conclusion or the general consensus is that claims making by drug war agencies is aimed at continuing the sort of dominant ideology that says that drugs are bad and that we have to fight a war. So it's really this kind of social construction of the drug war by government officials and agencies to continue this drug war. And I think people are aware of that, at least in academia.
Righto. Well, Matthew, I really want to thank you for your time today, and thank you for presenting here at the Normal Conference.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was our interview at the conference with author Matthew Robinson. Again, you can download his complete presentation at the Normal 2007 conference on the Normal Events podcast and also on Normal's 2007 conference webpage. We have links to it all right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Listen. listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.